Zalango, this is Connecticut Taco. What you're about to hear is a Human Rights Radio exclusive presentation that was first aired Sunday, February 10, 2002, at 11:30 p.m. entitled, The Human Rights Patrol, Part Number 52. What War on Drugs, Part 3? Cocaine, the Lie. Your host will be out of the criminal enterprise called Springfield, Illinois, war correspondent, commander in the Human Rights Radio Air Force, runaway slave, Kaka Mbana Kintako. Have a pleasant flight.
Our
Folks are still held hostage, won't ask questions, ruled by fear. See, Uncle Sam does know he owes our folk a big time debt. He knows his lies can't help him. Truth's our weapon, we'll collect. We're talking reparations, that's right, we know we are old. Cause for 11 generations, in here we were bought and sold. See, this crook called Sam did come up when he made our folks his slaves. His posse did the same in Europe, and yes, they too must pay. The lessons of mine, know thyself, will help us all move forward. We're taught it will teach us by self to rise to tote the torch. Like those days we were to be down, yet unhooked from our souls. Seeking truth will turn that around with the human rights patrol. It's time we know that we have rights. That's right, rights at our birth. That's right, those rights are human rights. They show our purpose on this earth. It's time we know that we have rights. That's right, rights at our birth. That's right, those rights are human rights. They show our purpose on this earth.
The People's Choice. Human Rights Radio, giving praise to our uncreated creator for allowing us to be with you for our 4,618th night of broadcasting here in the criminal enterprise called Springfield, Illinois at 106.7 FM. In the place to be with we, out of the criminal enterprise called Springfield, Illinois, World Correspondent Commander in the Human Rights Radio Air Force, co-producer of this Human Rights Radio Internet co-creation we call the Human Rights Patrol. Dada, Kanadi, Kentucky, and Zalango. It's time for volume number
52.
Help a brother out. 52 of this that we call the Human Rights Patrol. Another one of those humble contributions coming up out of the criminal enterprise called Springfield to our people's effort to get free from the mind control. This boy got on us. I mean, this is some serious business, too, boy. Anyhow, Dada, Kanadi, we're here. You want to shout out to the stations that make it possible up and down the human rights information network for folks to hear this, the Human Rights Patrol.
We're going to say Zalango to Human Rights Radio at 94.3 FM with Kaka Inko Yuhuru and the listeners in the Criminal Enterprise called Durham, North Carolina, and the listeners in the Criminal Enterprise called Decatur, Illinois at 99.9 FM, Human Rights Radio, Brown by Brother Lavelle. Also to those who listen at 103.3 FM, BVHP in the Criminal Enterprise called Bayview, Hunters Point, California with Kaka Michael Hibbett and the crew. And at 96.3 FM in the Criminal Enterprise called Santa Cruz, California, those who listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz with V-Man and their staff. Let us also shout out to the folks who listen to Berkeley Liberation Radio run by Paul Griffin and the crew. And to our newest listeners in the Criminal Enterprise called Dade County, Florida at 102.9 FM, Zalango. And at this time, let me remind you, wherever you're listening, to thank those who made it possible. And also invite all of you to check us out on the World Wide Web at www.radio.about.com. Look for the Human Rights Information Network. Click on and hear even more Human Rights Radio.
There you go. You got it right there from the co-producer of the show herself. Kanadi told y'all where everybody here in this program at. And again, we want to remind you, if you run up on these folks that are making it possible for you to hear this, the Human Rights Patrol, shout out them. Give them a shout out. Tell them no. Let them know you appreciate what they're doing. Because it is a labor of love that will allow, you know, that while they would play this for you. I mean, listen to this black man unrestrained by a restraining order or two, right? Well, you know, we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to deal with the issue still of the war on drugs. Because, you know, they got the prison thing looking like slave ships, you know. They would have been that packed with black back right after slavery, but they didn't have none, conveniently enough. And they sent us all back on what they call the inmate leasing program. Wall Street Journal did a big old thing on that in 2001, 2000. I had to get that. I think we talked about that earlier, Human Rights Patrol. But they locked up a lot of our folks under the pretense of that, and they have captured them a labor force like it ain't nobody business. And Uncle Sam, while he's screaming that he don't want this cocaine thing amongst the people, you'll find if you study his yesterdays, that's how he controlled the people. You was made a better breeder by you was given cocaine so you would be more active in breeding, I should say. Right? Yeah, did you know that? And then this devil is talking, man, this boy is ruthless. Uncle Sam ain't never been nothing nice. Anyhow, let's go back and do a little yesterday again on this cocaine thing. And then I got a couple key things along with this that we want to share with you. Now, listen, what was they doing with cocaine, say, 100 years ago in this country? You know, let's say around 1890 or so. Listen.
By 1890, cocaine is everywhere and used for everything. Baseball players use it on the diamond, a practice that today would result in expulsion from the game. In dockyards and work camps, cocaine is supplied to African-American employees to enable them to work longer and without fatigue.
So now you see today, Uncle Sam screaming about laborers and athletes and drugs. Where did they develop the relationship? As a part of everyday business in the USA. Whatever it takes for him to get more labor out of you, which results in more capital, greater accumulation, that boy game, okay? Ain't nothing he won't do.
Cocaine is even popularized in one of the best-selling books of the day, The 7% Solution. It's portrayed as a favorite drug of the wise and daring Sherlock Holmes, who eagerly injects it every day.
With his long white fingers, he adjusted the delicate needle and thrust the sharp point home, pressed down the tiny piston, and sank back into the velvet-lined armchair with a long sigh of satisfaction.
Well, the Sherlock Holmes stories actually help you understand the first cocaine epidemic, because all of these epidemics start with a favorable attitude toward the drugs, a tolerance of their use, or enthusiasm for their use. And only as time goes on, say 20 years, do people start changing their mind. They see the effects of long-term use and paranoia, violence, and so on and so forth. And then they become very fearful of cocaine.
At a time when morphine addiction among Civil War veterans is rampant and alcoholism is high, cocaine is used to cure both. The treatment comes to the attention of a young Austrian neurologist. His name is Sigmund Freud.
Freud drew a great deal of attention to this magical substance, as he himself called it. He believed it simply made you more normal. It was a wonderful substance that gave you energy, that improved your nerves, that gave you good tone overall. Freud saw it as a real wonder drug.
Eager to study the effects of the drug, Freud, becoming a kind of cocaine guinea pig, experiments with the drug by using it on himself. After one of his first experiments, Freud notes how the drug makes him sexually charged around his fiancée and records his feelings in a love letter to her.
Woe to you, my princess. When I arrive, I will kiss you quite red and feed you till you are plump. And if you are forward, you shall see who is the stronger, a gentle little girl who doesn't eat enough, or a big wild man who has cocaine in his body.
Now, cop, man, you know, if you was doing that, messing with crack or whatever, and the 5-0 roll on you, tell him, oh, I'm experimenting, you know what I'm saying? Here this boy Freud getting nailed, you know what I'm saying? And they said, oh, he was experimenting. Now, do you comprehend? It didn't come from what they call the lowlifes. It came from the real deal lowlifes, the intellectuals. Here Freud and Sherlock Holmes are shooting up. You know what I'm saying? And, I mean, you might not have heard of Sigmund Freud, but I think everybody my age probably heard of Sherlock Holmes. And they never said he was a crackhead. You know what I'm saying? No. But I'll tell you, these folks are something else, man.
Freud is addicted to cocaine before he knows it. He uses it morning, noon, and night. As a man of science, he records his emotional feelings, body temperature, and muscle strength. After months of taking cocaine, Freud releases a landmark paper that details what he calls the wonderful stimulating effects of the steel drug.
He thought it was an answer to many psychological problems. If somebody would come into his office depressed, he'd give them a little cocaine, they'd feel better, and he thought it was a miracle drug. If they came in depressed the next day, he'd just give them a little more.
Cocaine's addiction takes a toll on Freud. but it will be the truth about the drug that practically devastates him. After other prominent scientists study the cocaine phenomena, the proof is overwhelming. Freud's wonder drug is a fraud.
A doctor named Erlenmeyer did a double-blind study about taking people who are morphine addicts and giving them cocaine, and concluded it didn't do any good at all. And in fact, he predicted that it would be a third great scourge of the human race after alcohol and opium.
Challenged by Erlenmeyer and others, Freud's reputation is in question. He leaves Vienna for Paris to put his affair with cocaine behind him and never uses it again. In Paris, Freud rebuilds his career as the founder of modern psychoanalysis and the interpretations of dreams. Ironically, it was cocaine that inspired such vivid dreams in Freud to begin with. Years later, he returns to Vienna, but the use of cocaine for depression is over. Cocaine does find a legitimate medical application, one still used to this day. A contemporary of Freud named Karl Kohler uses it as a topical anesthesia in eye surgery.
Up till that time, to do a cataract operation meant either you had to use a general anesthetic, ether, people would retch or vomit, and to move that might destroy vision in that situation.
In spite of its dubious medical value, cocaine is widely used in America at the turn of the 20th century. In perfectly legal, self-administered patent medicines, cocaine will harm the lives of those who use it in excess. But still, there are no laws to ban it. That is, until a panic arises out of a popular misconception that cocaine is the cause of African-American violence toward whites. In an atmosphere charged with outright racial hatred, the fear of cocaine-induced violence adds a white backlash and ultimately changes the drug's legal status forever.
Now, I've said for quite some time that I truly believe this whole anthrax thing here at the end of 2001 in the criminal enterprise called the United States was to deal with the white addiction to cocaine. You know, be suspicious of all white powder, right? Make everybody receiving their little white powder packages at break time and lunchtime a little bit more leery and maybe cut down on some of that. You saw right there, they said when cocaine addiction got so bad, the government moved against it. But to get everybody to go that way, they start talking about what? How it made black men more aggressive. Okay, that sounds familiar, don't it? That sounds kind of familiar, huh? And I really believe, and why not make a few dollars by locking the African people up that won't voluntarily go to work for you, right? Lock them up. You can make them work like that by constitution, right?
A 100 years ago, cocaine is an inexpensive legal import, widely used in America to add pep and vigor. Dr. Hamilton Wright, an anti-opium crusader, even suggests cocaine be supplied to African-American dock workers and laborers to increase their productivity. And it is.
Now, you understand this? African people, do you understand? You know how you can kind of mess up if they got you addicted, you can kind of mess up at your business, you know, and mess people over and all that. But they always seem to let you get back to the work station because they know what you're going to do with your little change they're going to have to give you. You're going to owe it. You see what I'm saying? It's like we were talking about when Kanadi was with me and we did the part on Ritalin there in this here War on Drugs series. A lot of y'all don't realize it. They prepped y'all back in the day with Ritalin, you know? And ain't nobody trying to trip on it. I think one time the University of Michigan did a study on it, but I ain't been able to get a copy of it. You know, if I ever do, I have no doubt, you know, that if the real is up in there, which, you know, they might, you know, because they don't care what y'all know. They're not really worried about what y'all find out about what they do because they know, you know, it's like Frederick Douglass said, the limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress. They look at all the stuff they already doing to y'all. They say, they ain't going to say nothing, man. Shut up. They ain't going to say nothing. I know the Human Rights Information Network might bring it up, but they ain't going to say that, you know. Anyway, Well, you know, the whole deal is that they tried to criminalize us with this whole thing about the war on drugs. And a couple of things we need to know. One, we did a program back here on our 819th flight here back on the first month of 1992. We were blessed to have a chemical engineer, brother, chemical engineer on the air with us here in the criminal enterprise called Springfield, out of the criminal enterprise called Richmond, Virginia. And it was made possible by the brother by the name of Boba Kofi out that way. And he shared with us, you know, the chemical makeup of crack, okay? And he said that's what it is. It's chemicals. It ain't got nothing to do with nothing that came out no earth. And the only way you're going to make it, and cocaine is the same, the only way you're going to make it is, only thing you can do is you got to go to places where you buy chemicals, and those chemicals, you can't get them unless you got a license and you've been certified to buy those chemicals. And you know, a lot of people said, man, that black man don't know nothing. He engineered for the white people. They ain't told him nothing. And then here come the white folks on the television in 95 or 6 on the program used to call Crime Science. It used to come on, what channel did it used to come on? I don't know. One of them cable channels. And they were talking about, well, you know, if we really want to know where some cocaine or something like that comes from, we really have, it's really easy to find out because all of it takes chemicals to make, and those chemicals ain't sold in certain places. They said they can look at a bag and tell you where that bag came from. So let's go to the tape that the white people left.
The role has changed from one of being a pure enforcement chemist, as I would term it, and that is identify the substance and go to court, to more of an investigator, to more of a detective, a scientific investigator, and that is to try to look at varying substances, to look at similarities, dissimilarities, and draw some conclusions.
Once in the country, drugs are bulked up by adding cutting agents. In the case of heroin, these can be anything from barbiturates and sugar to acetaminophen and even strychnine. It's these cutting agents which provide some of the most revealing clues about the street-level retail market.
We look at the cutting agents because they can give us an idea of which groups are linked together. For instance, if an organization is using the same cut and we see them operating all over a certain city, that gives us an idea that maybe they have a sizable portion of the market in that city. If we see different heroin buys in the same city, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different cuts, that's a pretty good indication then that the market's divided up. There's a lot of small organizations that are selling heroin there. And so that will influence the way we approach it from an enforcement end.
In 1984, the DEA received intelligence which made them reassess their approach to the illicit drug trade. Gene Haislip learned that a member of one of the biggest drug cartels in Colombia, the Medellin cartel, had flown to the United States to purchase 1,300 drums of ether. Ether is a solvent which can be used to convert the coca paste into cocaine.
Well, we were contacted by the company because this seemed to be a very suspicious transaction. And the consequence of that is we allowed the transaction to occur, but through our means, we were able to trace this commodity, this quantity of chemicals, right across the U.S., across the Caribbean, right into Colombia, and ultimately into the jungle where it was being used to process cocaine. And a raid was planned, and this became the so-called raid on Tranquilandia.
So you know what would happen if somebody tried to order the chemicals necessary to make cocaine? They already know, because you can't get them unless you one of those, and then if you call and order too much, they're going to call it DEA, and they're going to sit on you. Now, here's one that they locked up a lot of black folks on. So my point there is, if they really wanted to stop it, they could trace exactly where every bag goes by the chemicals they find in the bag. And that's why they beat you down really bad if they catch you with a lookalike, because you messing with the quality out there, okay? You making people suspicious whether their quality is going to be good. And you get more time for a lookalike, which they should be, what do they care if somebody get faked out, right? You know what I'm saying? But they don't want people to get faked out. They want them to get the real, right? Because it has the chemistry to make them a long-term customer. And capital accumulation is the game. Now, here's one. They locked us up. So, again, they could take that bag out your pocket and tell you exactly what barrel of chemicals the chemicals that are in that bag came from. They know that, okay? Don't let them fade you like that. Mike Levine had a book called Deep Cover. That's one we read way back in the day. It's kind of old, you know, but check it out on what they really do with the dope thing. And there's a lot more stuff out there. Then now on a situation where they locked up, so many of us said the dog that they use to smell money said they money had cocaine on it. Check this out.
Finally, the Sulphur Police brought out Canine Billy. The dog detected an odor of narcotics on Leon's money and alerted. Strike three. Leon had done nothing illegal. He would not be arrested or even detained. He would, however, lose his cash as suspected drug money.
They ought to have hard evidence that they can bring to a courtroom and convince a jury that they are right. But they don't want to do that. They want us to take their word.
Defense attorney Bo Edwards says the criteria for seizing Leon's cash is typical of highway stops around the country. Often a dog alert provides police with their only hard evidence. And even the canines have recently come under attack. Scientific studies now indicate that cocaine has infected upwards of 75% of our money supply. How? This is the west side of Chicago, where the drive-up drug trade is hot. All-day street dealers exchange cocaine for cash. Here, one dealer takes time out for a snort, leaving cocaine on his hands, fingers, and under his nails. It's through this activity that cocaine often infects our money supply. The drug's residue is ingrained in the fiber of the bills and then passed from bill to bill as they rub together in general circulation. Hard to believe? Investigative reports pulled 13 bills from corner stores, gas stations, cash machines. Even one bill from Lieutenant Andrus's own wallet. Of the 13, 12, including the lieutenant's, tested positive for cocaine. In other words, if you have money in your wallet, Canine Billy could get you, too.
And Henry Hyde wrote a book, this congressional white dude. He was up in a criminal enterprise called the State of Illinois. He wrote a book. He said it was called Asset Forfeiture. Is your property safe from government seizure? He said 97% of all the money in circulation would smell like that because the chemicals that they use for that are so widely used throughout the population. Everything smelled like that. You knew that was a lie because ain't nobody gas work at the gas station. Money ever smelled like no gas. Ain't nobody work at the dang on fast food restaurant. Money ever smelled like onions. Their breath, but never their money, right? Think about that. You knew that was a lie when they first drove up. But look at all the folks' lives they done ruined with that lie. And still doing it today when you know they want you to have it because it makes you obedient. Keep you at the plow, right? All right, you can do with the information what you want. All we have a responsibility to do is bring it to you. That last piece of tape we got from the, what is it, A&E?
Yeah,
A&E. Mm-hmm. And that was a program called Seized by the Law, right? All right. And the other one, Kanani, reminded me, Crime Science, that came from what, A&E?
Mm-hmm.
Arts and Entertainment Channel as well. And the first piece came from, I think, the History Channel. Yeah, I think so. All right, anyhow, you heard the information. Kanadi's here to remind y'all who made it possible for you to hear this Human Rights Information Network exclusive presentation coming up out of Human Rights Radio here in the Criminal Enterprise called Springfield, Illinois. Kanadi.
We're going to say Zalango to Human Rights Radio at 94.3 FM with Kaka Inko Yahuru and the listeners in the Criminal Enterprise called Durham, North Carolina, and the listeners in the Criminal Enterprise called Decatur, Illinois, at 99.9 FM, Human Rights Radio, Brown by Brother Lavelle. Also to those who listen at 103.3 FM, BVHP in the Criminal Enterprise called Bayview, Hunters Point, California, with Kaka Michael Hibbett and the crew. and at 96.3 FM in the Criminal Enterprise called Santa Cruz, California. Those who listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz with V-Man and their staff. Let us also shout out to the folks who listen to Berkeley Liberation Radio, run by Paul Griffin and the crew. And to our newest listeners in the Criminal Enterprise called Dade County, Florida, at 102.9 FM, Zelango. And at this time, let me remind you, wherever you're listening, to thank those who made it possible. And also invite all of you to check us out on the World Wide Web at www.radio.about.com. Look for the Human Rights Information Network. Click on and hear even more Human Rights Radio.
Yeah, you can get all kind of information you want, but then there's going to be some information that's going to be of some use to you. We hope this is. If not, you know, apply the digestive process. Gennady, another scholarly put together program here, and we appreciate your help in doing that. And we're going to get out of here in our 4,618th night of broadcasting. In the studios with us tonight, out of the Criminal Enterprise, called Springfield, Illinois, is war correspondent, commander in the Human Rights Radio Air Force, co-producer of the Human Rights Patrol, Dada Kanadi Kentaco. I'm in Banda Kentaco. Again, we're in our 4,618th night of broadcasting here in the Criminal Enterprise, called Springfield, Illinois. There is no question about it. You are listening to the People's Choice. I'm Banda Kentaco, because the people chose to listen to the Human Rights Information Network.
Remember the humanity?
We remember the humanity.
Glory and sufferings of our ancestors.
Glory and sufferings of our ancestors.
And honor the struggle of our elders.
And honor the struggle of our elders.
We will strive to bring new values.
We will strive to bring new values.
And new life to our people.
And new life to our people.
We will have peace and harmony among us.
We'll have peace and harmony among us.
We will be loving.
We'll be loving.
Sharing.
Sharing.
And creative.
And creative.
We will work.
We will work.
Study.
Study
and listen.
And listen.
So we may learn.
So we may learn.
Learn so we may teach.
Learn so we may teach.
We will cultivate self-reliance.
We will cultivate self-reliance.
We will struggle to resurrect.
We'll struggle to resurrect.
And unify our homeland.
And unify our homeland.
We will raise many children for our nation.
We'll raise many children for our nation.
We will have discipline.
We'll have discipline.
Patience.
Patience.
Devotion.
Devotion.
And courage.
And courage.
We will live as models.
We'll live as models.
To provide new direction for our people.
To provide new direction for our people.
We will be free and self-determinate.
We'll be free and self-determinate.
We are African people.
We are African people.
Aluta.
Aluta.
Continua.
Continua.
Kufala.
Kufala.